Does the Bible actually help in real life? That's the question we're wrestling with today. When I meet with people, there's always this sense that how does the Bible actually apply to my life today? If it's an ancient book written by ancient people a long time ago, what possible relevance could it have for me today? Well, that's the question we're wrestling with. I'm glad you've joined us. Let's dive in. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Whiskey in the Writings. Today, we are drinking Russell Reserve. This is a 10-year bourbon. I love Russell Reserve bourbon. This is such a good whiskey. I don't even like to mix it with anything. A lot of times, I might mix like some Coke with a whiskey, kind of a like a Bullet or a Wild Turkey. There are drinks that I like to make like old fashions with, like a Woodford is a great old fashioned, a bourbon. But when it comes to like just drinking a bourbon neat, it doesn't get much better and affordable with Russell's. This Russell Reserve, this 10 year is just delicious. It's super smooth. You don't have to let it breathe like other whiskeys, like the Heaven Hill. That I share and talk about. You have to let that breathe a little bit for it not to bite as hard. This is just from beginning to end, just a smooth, delicious whiskey. And again, my favorite thing about this is the price point. It's not that expensive. So super easy to drink. That's what I've got poured today in my Whiskey in the Writings tumbler. If you would like your own Whiskey in the Writings tumbler, make sure to give at storiesoftove.com, our parent company that puts on all of this Whiskey in the Writing and supports Whiskey in the Writing. But you can donate there, and any donation will send you a Whiskey in the Writings glass for yourself, so that when you're enjoying this content, you can be having a drink with me. So, all that to be said, we're going to dive right in. Okay, so before we get into our content for today, I want to make a little plug, something I'm actually pretty excited about. So I have over here, sitting next to me, a couple things. I'm going to push that one out of the way for now. This is a Bibliotheca. And if you've never seen this before, this was produced mid-2000s. I can't even remember. It used to be a Kickstarter project. It had to have been in the 2012, 13, 14, around that area, a Kickstarter project. And what it is, it's the Bible. So it's formatted in like the Tanakh, which is the Hebrew formation without the New Testament here. So you got it's not the full Tanakh, but it's broken up into different segments. And what I love about this is how beautiful it is, one, and two, the way that it's formatted. So most all of your Bibles will have chapters and verses to help make sense of where you're at and where you're reading. And what this does here, this one is the Writings. So this is like Psalms and Proverbs. I love the lay flat. Listen, if you don't have a lay flat Bible, you got to find one. I don't even like buying Bibles that are not lay flat anymore, because it's so annoying when you got a Bible that's just kind of sitting up like that and it's like flopping over. I love that they made this Bible just a lay flat. It's gorgeous. It feels great in your hands, the paper quality. And then there's just the text. There's no chapter or verse or footnotes at the bottom or a lot of interlinear type data to distract your eye or take you out of the moment. It's just the text. And I love this. And I was so happy when I bought it. You can see here, you know, this is the Psalm, and you can just see how gorgeous it looks on paper. It's so easy to read. That's what I love about Bibles without chapters and verses. When I just want to enjoy the Bible, when I just want the Bible to just speak to me, this is the kind of Bible I read out of. When I'm trying to study and learn, you know, I got the chapter verse Bibles, the study Bibles, all that stuff. But when I'm just doing my own devotion, this is what I love to do devotions out of, because it just speaks to me on its own, and there's no filler around it, and I can just meditate on the literature. So it's wonderful. I love this. I was so excited to get it. And then I started reading it. And here's the thing. I mean, it's the Bible. It's awesome. But it's the American edition, the American Revised Edition. And it's from the edited 2016 version. And I'll tell you what, the American Revised Edition is a little hard to read. It feels clunky at times. The translation, although a great translation and very textually sound translation, it's just, I don't feel like it's very readable, okay? And so when I'm doing my devotions, I want the literature to flow and to speak to me. Again, I'm not trying to be technical. I'm just trying to let the spirit of the text speak to my heart in my mind. And so I found it to be too clunky and I didn't enjoy it. So I stopped reading it. But then, y'all, get this. Put this back in here. But then, this bad boy came on the market. This is the Lectio Bible. And if you're wondering what the Lectio Bible is, it's a Bible that has been produced in partnership with Zondervan and Mark Comer, the author of Practicing the Way. Sorry, dude, if you get caught wind of this and I just butcher your name. John Mark Comer. And the Zondervan Group, they produced an NIV translation of the Bible. Lectio is Latin for read. And so the idea here is to get you just to read the text. And the NIV is a great readable Bible. And however you feel about it, it just is. It's very accessible. But again, all the benefits of hardcover. I love the fabric, the feel of it. It just feels so good in your hands. I open it up. Lo and behold, it's a lay flat. So I love, checks that box. It's no chapter and verse. Oh my gosh, I love this. So I can just do devotions. And it's a translation that, quite honestly, it's like one of my favorites. I know I do all my study and I do most all of these Whiskey in the Writings through the NET, which is a wonderful translation. I use it all the time, but I became a Christian reading the NIV. And so like, it's so, I don't know, it just sits with me, right? Because I'm just familiar with it, but I love it. I mean, check that out, guys. They're like, no distraction on the page. I don't know if you can see this. No distraction on the page. It's just straight text. And you might be like, whoa, well, where am I at? And what part am I? Yeah, that's the point. Get lost in the story. And I'm so thankful that the team at Zondervan and John Mark Comer put this together. I love his book, Practicing the Way on Discipleship. I also love The Relentless Elimination of Hurry. I'll link to both of those in the show notes so you can pick up those must-read books. And I'm so thankful that he put this together, and I couldn't be more happy with it. Here's the thing. I'm not being paid for this promotion. It'd be kind of rad if I were, but I'm not. I'm just telling you this because I just want to provide you with a resource that I think is pretty cool. So if you haven't heard of it, go to Amazon. You can get it on Amazon. Order it there. Have it on your counter. Make it your morning devotional Bible and just sit and read through the text. It's absolutely gorgeous. Feels great in your hands. Super readable translation. You're going to be super happy with this Bible. So if you're someone like me that likes to get Bibles and enjoys just reading the text for what it is, you're not going to go wrong here. This is the Lectio Bible, and that's my promo. I just want to let you guys know about it because I was super jazzed to get it in the mail, and I've really enjoyed it so far. So that's a little intro. Commercial before our topic today. So, for those of you that just skipped past my commercial, that's okay. I encourage you to go back another time and watch it. But you're more interested in the question, is the Bible relevant? What a great question. I meet with so many people. In fact, Just recently, I had two different conversations with two completely different people. And this was the question they were asking. At the heart of it, it was like, why should I trust this thing? This thing we call a Bible, why? What's in it that's going to help me today? Isn't it outdated? Isn't it ancient? Is it even, you know, relevant anymore? My answer to that is absolutely yes. And so I thought it would be important to have this conversation for those of you that are struggling to even make a decision whether or not to begin to investigate the Bible, read it for the first time, challenge yourself with the Bible, and you're just even wondering, is it relevant? Well, I'm going to offer for you three different areas that I think that the Bible is relevant to us today. But let me give this one clarifying point. If you're trying to approach the Bible so that it can answer specific questions you have about cultural things in your life, i.e. things that are relevant to your world right here and now, you may struggle if that's your approach to find answers. But if your approach to reading the Bible is one in which the way that we talk about it here at Whiskey in the Writings, where you're looking to gain wisdom that you can then apply to different aspects and categories of your life, then that's when the Bible really begins to pop. And so that's what I'm going to challenge you with. If you think the Bible is simply a rule book or a how-to manual, you're going to struggle to find answers. You're going to get frustrated when the things that you expected from the Bible didn't actually pan out the way that you wanted them to. So what I want to do is try to offer you wisdom literature investigation into how the Bible can still be relevant to questions and thoughts that we have in our lives from today, in the past, and in the future. Because many of the things that we wrestle with, y'all, in life is not new. I mean, it just isn't. People have been wrestling with questions, thoughts, these big picture ideas for centuries and centuries and centuries. And the Bible has been relevant to answer those questions all the way through. And so we're going to look at three of those today and then have some closing remarks about it. So without any further ado, let's begin. Okay, the number one reason why I think that the Bible is relevant to us today first is this. I think that the Bible helps us with one of the biggest crises that we see in our world today. And that crisis is the crisis of anxiety. The crisis of anxiety. You see, studies have shown that anxiety is on a destructive path in the lives of so many people. So many of us deal with anxiousness, myself included. And we have anxiousness on different degrees and different levels. Anxiousness about jobs, anxiousness about families, anxiousness about love, anxiousness whether or not I'm gonna make it, anxiousness on whether the world's gonna make it, anxiousness around who's in charge, anxiousness about why this person isn't in charge. I mean, the list can go on and on and on. And there's so much work to be done to unpack why are we so anxious. But the Bible offers us a path forward in regards to our anxiousness. So Jesus, being our model for what it looks like to be a healthy and whole human being, he offers us this challenge. He says in his what's called Sermon on the Mount, which is basically a collection of his sayings that he would go around when he would visit towns and cities to, he'd preach this message essentially. And in Matthew chapter 5, 6, and 7, those sayings are collected together in what's called the Sermon on the Mount. And part of that saying, Jesus dives into this question of anxiousness because that's something they dealt with back then. And what he offers feels a little weird. So let me explain. He says this. He says, do not worry about tomorrow. Or other translations might say, do not be anxious about tomorrow. And he goes on to say what you'll eat, what you'll wear. So Jesus, right out of the gate, begins to offer us a challenge to not worry. And of course, like, you just read that on surface level. And if you've ever read that in the Sermon on the Mount, and you get to that point and you're like, oh, okay, Jesus, yeah, I'll just not be anxious. Like, how do I actually do that, right? And so there is a idea that's being presented to us by Matthew that carries itself forward through the rest of his gospel. So we read something like, don't worry about these things. And he said, and then he begins to bridge it with this, like, you know, the birds of the air, they don't worry about where they're going to sleep or what they're going to eat. Look at the grass of the field. It exists in the state that it is. And then he says, doesn't God care about you more than the grass of the field, which is here today and gone tomorrow, or the birds of the air? And so Jesus is offering us a perspective change, right? So connected to the challenge to do not worry, do not be anxious, is directly correlated to how you perceive the world, okay? If you have a view of the world that you're all alone, there's lots to be worried about, and anxiousness can be crippling. But if you actually believe that Jesus is in charge, remember at the end and this is where it comes together. At the end of Matthew's gospel, he's standing on the mountainside. This is before he leaves his disciples and he sends them out to be the church. He says this word. He says, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. So Jesus begins to say something that would have been completely radical to them then and us now, in that Jesus is in charge. His kingdom has come fully into the world through him. He has taught his followers in how to live it out, and he is making a declaration about who has the power. So, for followers of Jesus, we believe that Jesus is actually in charge. Okay, so this leads us down other paths. Well, okay, Joe, well then why are bad things happening if Jesus is in charge? This is the rhythm of the gospel. Jesus didn't say, I'm in charge, now I'm going to fix everything right now. He said, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Now, go into the world and make disciples. Baptize them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. So Jesus, there's a flow here. Jesus says, I am in charge and I have shown you, this is essentially what he's saying at the end of the gospel. I'm in charge. I have essentially shown you what it looks like to live in my way of being in charge. Now go show others how to do it. And so when we ask a question like, well, if Jesus, you're in charge, why don't you fix this thing? Jesus would respond to us, well, I want to, and I want to send you. When we say, Jesus, if you're in charge, why do bad things happen? Jesus' response is going to be, yeah, I don't want that either. That's why I have you. The way of the kingdom is when God partners with humans to bring about his will. That's the way it was set up in Genesis 1. That's the way he's wanted it to be all throughout the Old Testament literature. That's the way he showed us how to do it through the Gospels. And that's the way that he continues to do it through this, the ages of the church until he finally comes back. That's Revelation 21. I just gave you a 30,000-foot view of the Bible. But here's the thing. We're talking about, is the Bible relevant today? I say it is, in that the Bible offers us answers to our anxiety that we have in life. Paul, a writer of the New Testament, also said this word, and I'll read it over here. In Philippians chapter 4, verse 6 and 7, he says this, do not be anxious about anything, anxiousness, worry. He says, don't be anxious or worry about anything. He says, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your request to God. So he says, in every situation, take that information to God. Okay, so when we are anxious, when we're living in a place of worry, which is about tomorrow, isn't it? Anxiousness is about the unknown. It's about the thing that we don't have control of. Anxiousness is rooted in an inability to govern our future, right? I'm worried about a job. I'm worried about the economy. I'm worried, anxious about my family. And what's happening there? Because I can't guarantee what's going to happen the next day, right? And so if there are no guarantees, and Jesus says, just worry, don't be anxious about tomorrow. Worry about today. Today is all you have. That's where your focus needs to be. But that doesn't mean we don't have thoughts about the future. So what Paul does is he comes in and he says, hey, listen, don't be worried about those things, like Jesus said, but with everything, take it to God. So when we feel uncertainty and the unknown of tomorrow that causes anxiousness within us, the challenge is that we take that to God. But there is a clarifying point to that taking it to God. There is a way to take that to God. And he says, with thanksgiving. With thanksgiving. So we're anxious, we're feeling out of control. We turn to God and we say, God, I am so scared. I am so worried. I don't know what to do. You let it out. You let that emotion out of you. You don't bind it in. You don't carry it inside of you. You let God have it. You give it all. Just like David did in the Psalms when he's hiding in a cave and he says, God, why have you forsaken me? We let it out to God. But we always turn to gratitude. Gratitude. Where we take a moment to thank God, to recognize the good in our lives. This is so important. Did you know that when you have gratefulness in your heart and in your mind, it rewires, it reprograms your brain? If all you're doing is living for the unknown, the anxiousness of the unknown, and sitting in that worry and that fear, that's all you're going to perceive about the reality around you. And is it the reality around you? Is there truly zero good? That's not to minimize your terrible experience. Trust me, there are seasons where it's really hard, but there are also times in that season that we can recognize good. And so we got to fight for that, because when you continue to live with gratitude, your brain, the science is there, it rewires, it reprograms your brain to actually see the good. And so what Paul's doing is offering us timeless truth, isn't he? Right? Something that's ancient. Oh, isn't this an ancient book and it's archaic? And No, Paul's going like, hey, there's something here. This is the way God wired it. He wants to hear from you. He wants you to pour your heart out to him when you're worried and you're scared and you're anxious. But also look for the gratitude, because when you do so, something different happens to you. So this is important. So is the Bible relevant to anxiousness? It seems to be. Jesus, Paul, like, they're offering you wisdom in how to actually live out times of anxiousness in your life. So that was a long explanation. What about this one though? And I'll go maybe a little bit quicker on these next two, but is the Bible, so here's number two, is the Bible relevant to my identity and who I am? Well, that's a great question. And I want to answer emphatically yes. In fact, the opening chapter of the Bible, Genesis chapter 1, verse 27, gives us one of the most profound statements in all of human history. Undoubtedly, because at the time that this was written, Genesis chapter 1, at the time that this narrative was being shared with people, even before it was written, when it was just oral information being shared around campfires with tribal people, talking about how we got here and why we're here, the Genesis narrative is the first narrative to actually offer us a higher value in humanity than what the gods of the Egyptians or the Babylonian of the Enuma Elish or the Assyrians, any other empire had that had narratives about how we got here. Humans were the lowest in the pecking order. They were the ones there to serve gods. They were ruled over by the gods. And in Genesis chapter 1, verse 27, God creates humans. And an ancient person hearing that for the first time would have said, okay, yeah, I know that story. I got to serve them. I got to make sacrifices and offerings to them. And the person telling the story goes, no, hold on. No, this God created you like him. Now not ontologically like him, your flesh, your dust, but there is a spark in the human being that is connected to the divine nature of the Creator God, right? And so this is something that humans have been wrestling with forever. But my point in all of this is to say that your identity, who you are a creation of God. You are. Now, we can determine, like, well, what is a good-looking creation, a poor good-looking creation? We're not going to get into that. The point is simply that your identity isn't about what you produce. Your identity isn't about what family you're born into. Your identity isn't wrapped up in the location you were born in. Your identity isn't wrapped up in the color of your skin. The identity that you have is found in your divine spark. You have a divine spark. The Genesis story tells us that you matter. You matter. And if you matter to God, then He is going to put purpose and value into you. And so, is the Bible relevant to my identity? Absolutely. In that it offers you wisdom in understanding of who you are. You're not who other people say you are. You know, someone who says you're worthless, that you don't matter, that you'll never be good at anything. These things, those are human words. The divine Creator looks at you and says, no, I made you like me. You're like me. And I put something in you that's like me. And so you matter. You matter. So is the Bible relevant to that? I would say, yeah. Lastly, I would say this. Is the Bible relevant to relationships? What does the Bible have to say about our relationships? We as human beings are relational people. Meaning this, that we were created to be with people. Even the most introverted people in the world still need people. The difference is that they're not maybe as shallow as some of us extroverts, like me, that can just bounce around a room. They actually crave deep and intimate relationships instead of a lot of shallow ones. But the point is, relationships matter. And Jesus knew that relationships matter, which is why He challenged people that choose to follow His way to be a certain way in relationships. For instance, you have Matthew chapter 7, verse 12, which is the golden rule, right? We all know the golden rule. Do unto others, like I'm King James now, all of a sudden. he says the golden rule, right? That you should treat others the way you want to be treated, right? So that's a value that is unique, at least at the time that it was spoken to human history, that there's unique value to everyone, and Jesus offers that. How about Proverbs 15:1? This is an Old Testament writing. It says, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger, okay? What wisdom does that have? Well, tons if you're in a relationship, right? Me being gentle in my response to my loved ones goes a lot better than when I get short and harsh and it stirs up conflict, right? Wisdom, right? The Proverbs are going, yeah, if you want healthy relationships, these are the ways that you work. How about Ephesians chapter 4, verse 32? This is a writing by Paul to a church. He says, be kind and compassionate, forgiving one another, just as in Christ forgave you. Listen, this is written to Christians, right? So he's saying, be kind and compassionate to one another, something that's very much lacking in Christian circles today. We have demonstrated to this world nothing but unkindness and uncompassion to people who think differently and see the world differently. This should not be, right? That's not to say we can't have differences. Of course we're going to have differences. We're all different, but we can be kind and we can be compassionate and we can forgive, okay? We can forgive people. That's the way of Jesus, as Paul was instructing this church. So when it comes to, is the Bible relevant to our relationships? Here's my question. Do you want to have healthy relationships or problematic relationships? If your desire is to have healthy relationships, I believe the Bible's relevant today because it offers us wisdom on how to do that. And I've yet to see it go wrong. So I've seen it misapplied. I've yet to see it go wrong. And remember, I've said this before on Whiskey in the Writings, we don't judge Jesus by the abuse in His name. We judge Jesus by what he says, right? What's recorded that he said. So we don't judge Jesus or Christianity by the abuse in its name. And there's been a lot of abuse. We just judge Jesus for what he said. So with that, I do believe that the Bible is relevant, and I believe it has a lot of wisdom to offer us today. And hopefully I've stoked the fire a little bit, or at least encouraged you to actually investigate further. And if that's the case, I want to be a part of that journey. So reach out to me in the show notes, make a comment, like, subscribe, share this with people that you think that might help and be helpful. I'd love to be a part of that conversation too. But for now, I want to thank you for watching Whiskey in the Writings. And until next time, enjoy your drink and cheers.